Before the Party, with Dorothy Tutin, Derek Waring and Amanda Waring, and Doug Bogard as the narrator.
As garden parties went, it was going to be quite a grand affair. The Haywards had ordered ices, strawberry and vanilla, from Boddy, the confectioner, but they'd be making the iced coffee at home. Canon Haywood had always been extravagant in his praise of his wife's iced coffee. Everyone would be there. The guest of honour was to be the Bishop of Hong Kong. Mrs. Skinner was greatly looking forward to it, and especially to meeting the Bishop. Well, after all, her daughter had lived in the East for 8 years, and her son-in-law had been resident of a district in Borneo.
Well, I shall be wearing black, of course, and my toque.
And what, Mother, do you think the neighbourhood will say about those osprey feathers?
I don't care what they say. I know it's quite shocking to kill those beautiful white birds, and in the mating season, too, just for their feathers. But I didn't kill them, nor did dear Harold, who brought me the feathers all the way from Borneo. And now they're all I've got to remember him by. Yes, I shall certainly wear the toque.
And that's what you'll say if anyone brings up the subject?
If anyone does, Millicent, my dear, I shall give them very short shrift. What about you, Kathleen? Will you be wearing your black chiffon?
Well, I rather thought the silk blouse...
That's scarcely mourning.
It has got black in it. The blouse would be perfect. Really, Mother, there's no reason why we should all look as if we'd just come from a funeral. Harold's been dead for 8 months, for heaven's sake.
How can you speak like that, Millicent? I do think it very unfeeling of you.
It's not unfeeling, it's realistic.
Well, whatever Kathleen decides, I do hope you're not thinking of leaving off your widow's weeds, Millicent. You don't want to cause gossip.
People don't wear mourning in the way they used to. I'm sure Harold wouldn't want me to go on mourning for him indefinitely.
Dear Harold.
Mrs. Skinner had thought it very peculiar that her daughter should have no photographs of Harold in her room. Indeed, she'd spoken of it once, but Millicent had made no reply. Indeed, Millicent had been strangely silent since she came back from Borneo. She hadn't encouraged the sympathy Mrs. Skinner would have been so willing to show her. She seemed unwilling to speak of her great loss. But then sorrow took people in different ways. Mr. Skinner had said that the best thing was to leave her alone.
Ah, there you are, Millicent, my dear. I'm pleased to see you decided to stay in mourning.
It seemed better to avoid giving people the chance to talk.
Quite right, my dear. You look very suitable.
For a widow of 8 months, you mean?
Kathleen, you do look nice.
Thank you, Mother. There is sufficient black in the blouse, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Ah, there you all are. Yeah. How do I look?
You look splendid, dear. Every inch the successful solicitor.
I can't remember the last time I wore this tailcoat. As you see, it still fits perfectly. Mm. Not one surplus ounce of fat in 20 years.
Bravo, Father. What a pity I don't take after you.
But I was rather wondering about the top hat. Should I wear it, you think?
Better to be on the safe side, Father.
Yes, I incline to agree with you, Kathleen, my dear. After all, it is a bishop we're meeting.
And how about a buttonhole while you're about it?
You think so, Millicent? Yes, perhaps you're right.
I wouldn't, Father. I don't think it's awfully good form.
A lot of people will be wearing them.
Only clerks and people like that. The Haywards have to ask everybody, you know. Besides, we are in mourning.
We're asked for 4, but I don't think we ought to arrive much before 5:30. I told Davis to bring the car round at 4:15.
Generally, Kathleen drove the car, but on grand occasions like this, Davis, who was the gardener, put on his uniform and acted as chauffeur. It looked better when he were driven up, and naturally Kathleen didn't much want to drive herself when she was wearing her new silk blouse.
Well, we have 30 minutes before we leave. What shall we do? Whist anybody?
Millicent, you've been in a very strange frame of mind recently.
Scarcely surprising, given the circumstances. Wouldn't you say, Mother?
Millicent, there's something I want to say to you.
Oh, yes.
I had a round of golf after breakfast with Gladys Haywood.
Gladys Haywood was the Canon's only unmarried daughter.
Did you beat her?
She told me something about you which I think you ought to know.
Something about Millicent?
It appears the bishop's very fond of travelling. He's been to Borneo, and he knows a good many of the people that you know.
Oh. Did he know poor Harold?
Yes. It seems he met him at Kuala Selor. He remembers him very well. He says he was shocked when he stopped off in Singapore on the way home to hear of Harold's death.
In that case, the bishop will be particularly interested to see you, Millicent, dear. You'll have a great deal to talk about.
Millicent, why did you tell us that Harold died of fever?
But of course Harold died of fever, Kathleen. What else did he die of?
According to Gladys, the bishop says that Harold committed suicide.
Suicide? Dear heaven, Alfred!
Is that true, Millicent?
It is.
Suicide?
But why on earth didn't you tell us?
I didn't want Joan to know anything about it. I thought it better she should grow up believing her father died of fever. Incidentally, Mother, will Joan be having her tea in the kitchen?
Yes, dear. Yeah. She'll have it when the servants have theirs.
I don't think you have the faintest idea of the awkward position you've put us in, Millicent.
Oh, really?
Gladys Haywood said she thought it most unfriendly of me not to have told her the truth. I had the greatest difficulty in getting her to believe that I knew absolutely nothing about it.
I hope it didn't put you off your game.
Really, my dear? I think that is a most improper observation.
It was my business, and if I chose to keep it to myself, I didn't see why I shouldn't.
And you didn't even confide in me. That doesn't show much affection for your mother.
No. You might have known it was bound to come out.
Why? I didn't expect the two garrulous old parsons would have nothing better to do than gossip about me.
When the bishop said he'd been to Borneo, it was only natural for the Haywoods to ask if he knew you and Harold.
Oh, that's neither here nor there. I think you should certainly have told us the truth, Millicent. We could have decided what was the best thing to do. As a solicitor, I can assure you that in the long run, attempting to hide things only makes them worse.
Oh, poor Harold. It seems so dreadful. He was always such a good son-in-law to me. Whatever induced him to do such a dreadful thing?
The climate.
I think you'd better tell us everything, Millicent.
Let Kathleen tell you.
Well?
The bishop says he cut his throat.
Oh, good heavens! Oh, my darling, my poor, poor child.
Oh, Mother, please don't fuss me. I can't stand being mauled about.
Really, Millicent?
And I had to be told the details of my brother-in-law's death by a friend. How does that make us all look?
It's such a shock!
The bishop is very anxious to see you, Millicent. He wants to tell you how very much he feels for you.
We all do.
He told the Haywoods that Millicent had been away with Joan, and when she came back, she found poor Harold lying dead on his bed.
Oh, is that what happened, darling? How ghastly for you.
Don't cry, Mother. It'll make your eyes red. People will notice.
They were all silent while Mrs. Skinner, drying her eyes, made a successful effort to control herself. It seemed very strange to her that at this very moment she should be wearing in her toque the osprey feathers that poor Harold had given her.
There's something else I ought to tell you.
Oh, Kathleen, don't you think that...
I don't want to say anything to wound you, Millicent, dear, but there is something else, and I think you all should hear it.
Oh, dear.
The bishop says that Harold drank.
Oh, my goodness, how dreadful. What a shocking thing to say. Did Gladys Haywood tell you that? What did you say?
I said it was entirely untrue.
Now, that's what comes of making secrets of things. It's always the same. Try and hush something up, and all sorts of rumours get about, which are 10 times worse than the truth.
Apparently, when the bishop stopped off in Singapore, they told him that Harold killed himself during an attack of delirium tremens.
Oh, my word!
Millicent, I think for all our sakes you ought to deny that.
Yes, dear, when you see the bishop, you must make a point of refuting that as a wicked scandal.
But how on earth can this story have got about, Millicent? Harold was always very abstemious.
Here...
Are you saying he did drink?
Like a fish.
Oh.
Millicent, I simply don't understand you. How on earth can you talk like that about your husband when he's dead? You've been so strange since you came back. I could never have believed that a girl of mine could take her husband's death like this.
Never mind about all that, idiot, so we can go into that later. Now, Millicent, of course, I can see why you told us Harold had died of fever. I think it was a mistake, but understandable.
Yes, Father.
But take my word for it. The truth is bound to come out sooner or later. Now, I don't know to what extent the bishop's account accords with the facts, but if you take my advice, you'll tell us everything. In a place like this, people are bound to talk.
Especially with the canon and Gladys Haywood gossiping left, right and centre.
And we'll need to know the exact truth if we are to counteract the wilder rumours.
Well, dear,
I don't think you'll much like the truth if I tell it you.
Nevertheless.
If you insist. You know, I wasn't in love with Harold when I married him.
Millicent!
Oh, Mother, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I was 27, and there was no one on the horizon, and then came Harold. 44 did seem rather old, but he had a very good position. I wasn't likely to get a better chance.
Now I see why you took his photograph away.
Don't, Mother, your eyes. Remember the party.
Harold had been staying with some people who'd been 30 years in Borneo, and they spoke well of the country. There was no reason why an English woman shouldn't live there quite comfortably. When Harold's visit to his old friends was drawing to a close, Mrs. Skinner invited him to spend a fortnight with them. It was towards the end of his stay that Harold and Millicent became engaged. They had a very pretty wedding. They went to Venice for the honeymoon, and then started for the East.
People were very nice to me at Kuala Selor. We stayed with the resident, and everyone asked us to dinner. Once or twice I heard men ask Harold to have a drink, but he refused. He said he'd turned over a new leaf now he was a married man. I didn't know why they laughed. I found out, though, later.
Kathleen never took her eyes off her sister's impassive face. But Mr. Skinner stared straight in front of him at the Malay arms, krisses and parangs, on the wall above the sofa on which his wife was sitting.
It wasn't until I went back to Kuala Selor 18 months later that I found out why they had laughed. By then I knew a great deal more than I'd known before.
What did you know?
Well, for one, I knew that Harold had come to England that time with the express purpose of getting married. He didn't much mind who it was.
Oh.
How we spread ourselves out to catch him, Mother. We needn't have taken so much trouble.
I don't know what you mean, Millicent. I simply saw that he was attracted by you.
If you say so. And by then I also knew that he was a confirmed drunkard.
What does that mean, precisely?
Precisely, Father. It means that it had come to the point where the chief secretary had told him he'd have to resign unless he stopped drinking.
Oh, yeah.
The chief secretary said he'd give him one more chance. He could take his leave then and go to England. He advised him to marry, so that when he got back he'd have someone to look after him. It's quite simple, really. Harold married me because he wanted a keeper.
Oh.
They took bets in Kuala Selor on how long I'd keep him sober.
But, Millicent, darling, he was in love with you. He was. You don't know how he used to speak to me about you. And when you went to Kuala Selor to have Joan, he wrote me such a charming letter about you.
Millicent looked at her mother. Her hands lying in her lap began to tremble a little. She thought of the start of her married life, how they'd travelled upstream in a prahu. She'd somehow expected the rivers of Borneo to be dark and strangely sinister, but the sky was blue, dappled with little white clouds, and the green of the mangroves washed by the flowing water glistened in the sun. On each side stretched the pathless jungle, and in the distance, silhouetted against the sky, was the rugged outline of a mountain. She seemed to be entering a friendly, fertile land, and she had a sense of spacious freedom. The assistant resident in ducks and topi was at the landing stage to meet them, a dozen trim little soldiers at his back to do them honour.
Well, here we are, darling. Let me out first. I'll give you a hand. Watch out. It's a bit unsteady. There.
Thanks, Harold. I'll be all right.
Hello, Simpson. Darling, may I introduce my assistant, Mr. Andrew Simpson?
How do you do, Mr. Simpson?
How do you do, Marmy? It's a great pleasure to meet you. Oh, by Jove, sir, I'm glad to see you back. It's been deuced lonely without you.
The days passed easily enough. At dawn, a boy brought their tea, and they lounged about the veranda until it was time to dress for breakfast. And then Harold went to his office and she spent an hour or two learning Malay. After tiffin, he went back to the office while she slept. And later they went for a walk or played golf on the 9-hole links which Harold had made on a piece of clear jungle below the bungalow. Night fell at 6, and Andrew Simpson came along for a drink. They chatted till dinner, and sometimes Harold and Mr. Simpson played chess. After dinner, they read the papers which had left London 6 weeks before. Millicent enjoyed running the house. Now and then she went into the courthouse to hear Harold try cases, and he impressed her by his air of command and his dignity.
We'd been married nearly a year when two English naturalists came to stay with us for a few days on their way to the interior. I asked Andrew Simpson to dinner, and after the meal the men sat down to play bridge. After a bit I left them and went to bed. I don't know what the time was when I was woken by the sound of Harold staggering into the room. He clattered around for a bit, then he went outside, and I heard him being sick. I was absolutely disgusted, and I made up my mind to talk to him about it in the morning. But next day, I couldn't quite bring myself to speak of it.
Porridge? I doubt it, Millicent. Our guests might just manage a little Worcester sauce for breakfast. I don't think they'll fancy much else.
I do feel a trifle delicate this morning.
Well, what sort of host would send his guests to bed sober on the first night of their visit?
The next evening I sat up with them, and the party broke up at a reasonable hour. But I was never so relieved as when the two of them went on their way.
Some months later, Harold went on a tour of inspection of his district and came back with a bad attack of malaria.
This was the first time I'd seen the disease, and it didn't strike me as odd that Harold was very shaky when he recovered. He'd stand on the veranda, swaying slightly, and stare at me with glazed eyes.
It pulls you down dreadfully, this confounded malaria.
I thought Mr. Simpson began to look worried, and once or twice, when we were alone, he seemed on the point of saying something. But he never quite managed to speak, and I became quite nervous. One evening, when Harold had stayed later than usual at the office, I tackled him. Mr. Simpson, I believe you have something to say to me. What is it?
Me? Nothing. What makes you think I have anything in particular to say to you?
If it's something to do with Harold, don't you think it'd be kinder to tell me straight out?
I don't like saying anything about my chief behind his back, Mrs. Curtis. Malaria's a rotten thing. You feel awfully low after a bout.
I promise to be as silent as the grave, Mr. Simpson. Please tell me.
Well, I think it's a pity your husband keeps a bottle of whiskey at the office. He's had to take a nip more often than he otherwise would.
What precisely are you telling me, Mr. Simpson? Please, I need to know.
I'm afraid Mr. Curtis has been more or less drunk for the past 2 weeks. Hadn't you...
Of course I've noticed that he hasn't been himself. I thought it was the after-effects of the malaria.
But it wouldn't be so bad, except that...
Yes?
The natives are talking about it.
What are they saying?
That he'll soon be as bad as before his marriage.
What on earth do you mean? What happened before his marriage? Mr. Simpson, please...
No, Mama, I've said too much already. What's past is past.
Do you think he's drinking at this moment?
I don't know, ma'am.
Millicent, hot with shame and anger, walked across from the bungalow to the courthouse. She found Harold sitting in his office. There was a bottle of whiskey in front of him.
I came to see what you were doing.
Take a seat, my dear. Take a seat. I was detained by pressure of business.
Harold, you're drunk!
I haven't the remotest idea of what you mean.
No, Harold!
Don't cry, Millie. Please don't cry. I can't bear to see you crying. I promise you, it won't happen again. It was like blasted malaria.
It's so damned humiliating, Harold.
Oh, Millie.
Forgive me. Please forgive me.
Will you give me your word of honour that you will never touch liquor again?
Yes. Yes, I hate it.
You see, Harold, it's so terribly important. Now there's someone else to be considered.
Someone else? Who do you mean?
Can't you guess? Oh, Harold, we're going to have a baby.
Millie, you clever, clever girl. Come here. A family. That's the very thing I needed. That'll keep me on the straight and narrow, if nothing else will.
During the months before Millicent went off to Kuala Solor for her confinement, Harold was irreproachable. Tender, thoughtful, proud, and affectionate. When the time arrived for her to leave for her 6 weeks' absence, he came down to the landing stage to see her off.
Now, Millicent, you have my word that I'll not touch alcohol of any sort while you're away. You can trust me, dear. I never break a promise.
Joan was born. Millicent stayed with the resident and his wife, Mrs. Gray, a kindly middle-aged creature who was very good to her. During their time together, Millicent learned all there was to know of her husband's alcoholic past and of the ultimatum which had sent him to England in search of a wife. The time came for her to return with her baby and a nurse. She spent a night at the mouth of the river and sent a messenger in a canoe to announce her arrival. She scanned the landing stage anxiously as the launch approached it. Harold and Mr. Simpson were standing there. The trim little soldiers were lined up. Her heart sank. Harold was swaying slightly, like a man who seeks to keep his balance on a rolling ship. He was drunk.
I knew then that I hated him.
Oh, Millicent, don't say that. Don't forget that he's dead, poor man.
Go on.
When he found out that I knew all about him, he didn't bother very much more. In 3 months, he had another attack of the DTs.
Why didn't you leave him?
What would have been the good? He'd have been dismissed from the service within a fortnight. Who was to keep me and Joan? I had to stay.
My poor child.
It wasn't all bad. When he was sober, I'd nothing to complain about. He didn't love me, but he was fond of me. And I did my best. I persuaded Mr. Gray to stop supplies of whiskey from Kuala Selor, but he got it from the Chinese. He was too cunning for me. And so it went on, till our leave became due. Before we came, I begged him to be careful. I didn't want any of you to know what sort of a man I'd married. And all the time he was in England, he was all right.
Yes.
Before we sailed back, I warned him. He loved Joan, and she was devoted to him. Tell me, Harold, do you want your daughter to grow up knowing her father is a drunkard?
She mustn't. Millicent, she mustn't.
I agree. I won't allow it. But it's in your hands, Harold.
I know that.
I'm not quite sure you understand. What I'm saying is, the first time, the very first time you ever allow Joan to see you drunk, that's the moment that I take her away from you.
Millicent, you couldn't. You wouldn't.
Yes, Harold, I could, and I would. I would leave you instantly, and I would take our daughter with me. That night, I fell on my knees and thanked God, because I'd found a way of saving my husband. And for 2 years, we fought his disease together, and we won. For 2 years, he never touched a drop. He lost his craving entirely. He was even able to joke about it. Mr. Simpson had left us then, and we had another young man called Mr. Francis.
I'm a reformed drunkard, you know, Francis. If it hadn't been for my wife, I'd have been sacked long ago.
Then Joan fell ill. For 3 weeks they were very anxious, and when she recovered, Millicent took her down to the mouth of the river to get a breath of sea air. They stayed a week.
I thought a great deal about Harold while we were there, and all at once I knew that I loved him. I was so glad when the prahu came to fetch us back because I wanted to tell him. I can't describe how happy I was.
As they rowed upstream, the headman told her that Mr. Francis had had to go up country to arrest a woman who had murdered her husband. He'd been gone a couple of days.
I was surprised that Harold wasn't on the landing stage to meet me. He was always very punctilious about that sort of thing. I walked up the little hill to the bungalow. The ayah brought Joan behind me. The bungalow was strangely silent. There seemed to be no servants about, and I couldn't make it out. The ayah took Joan round to the servants' quarters for a drink, and I went through to the bedroom. Harold was lying on the bed asleep.
I never sleep in the afternoons. It's a quite unnecessary habit that we white people have got into.
I went up to the bed softly. I thought I'd have a joke with him. I opened the mosquito curtains. He was lying on his back, with nothing on but a sarong, and there was an empty whiskey bottle by his side. He was dead drunk.
You beast. You beast! Wake up! Open your eyes! How could you do this to me? How could you? God, I hate you! Look at me! Open your eyes! I should have thought it best to let him go on sleeping.
There was a parang on the wall by the side of the bed.
What's a parang?
Oh, don't be silly, Edith. There's one on the wall behind you.
You mean...
The sword, Edith!
Suddenly the blood spurted out from Harold's throat.
Oh.
There was a great red gash right across it.
What in God's name do you mean?
The parang wasn't on the wall anymore. It was on the bed.
But I don't understand. How could he have committed suicide if he was in the state you describe?
Millicent, for God's sake, explain.
I can't. I don't know what happened. The parang was on the wall. Then there was all the blood. He died almost at once.
But you wretched woman, it was a murder.
Millicent, you didn't. Did you?
I don't know who else did.
Oh, my God.
What happened then?
I screamed. I called for the ayah. I told her to keep Joan with the servants. When she came, I showed her Harold. I cried out, "The Tuan's killed himself." Later, I wrote a letter to Mr. Francis and asked him to come back at once. I said that on my return, I'd found Harold with his throat cut and that he must have committed suicide during an attack of delirium tremens. In the tropics, you have to bury people quickly. I got a Chinese coffin, and the soldiers dug a grave behind the fort.
Oh.
When Mr. Francis came, Harold had been buried for 2 days. He had no reason to disbelieve what I told him. I showed him the empty bottle. The servant said he'd been drinking hard ever since I left. I told the same story at Kuala Selor. Everyone was very kind to me. The government granted me a pension.
Millicent? I am a member of the legal profession. I have certain obligations. You placed me in a monstrous position.
What are you going to do about it?
You have committed murder.
Oh.
Do you expect me to connive at it?
Oh, don't talk nonsense, Father.
I beg your pardon. I...
Excuse me, sir. Davis has brought the car around.
Thank you, Perkins. Say we'll be along directly.
I can't possibly go to the party now. How can we face the Haywoods and the Bishop?
We must go, Mother. It would look so funny if we stayed away. Oh, Millicent, I do think the whole thing is such frightfully bad form.
Catherine's right, my dear. I'm afraid we must go.
The osprey's in my toque that Harold gave me with his own hands.
I ought never to have been told. I think it was most selfish of you to tell me.
You'll get used to it, you know. At first I thought of it all the time, but now I forget it for 2 or 3 days together. It's not as if there was any danger.
They walked through the hall and out of the front door. The three ladies got into the back of the car, and Mr. Skinner seated himself beside the driver. Davis took his seat, and they drove off to the Canon's garden party.
In Before the Party by Somerset Maugham, Dirk Bogarde was the narrator, with Dorothy Tutin as Mrs. Skinner, Amanda Waring as Millicent Skinner, Derek Waring as Mr. Skinner, and Caroline Strong as Kathleen Skinner. Richard McCabe was Harold, and Stephen Critchlow, Simpson. Before the Party was dramatised by Neville Teller and directed by Janet Whittaker.